Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Today, we are doing a new type of episode, a special segment that's been in the works that I'm really excited about. We're joined by Haley Stessman, who is an Iowa baseball manager, as well as the founder of her own blog series about kind of being a woman in sports and writing about that type of stuff. It's called Her Playbook. So Haley, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. So I want to kind of jump in first. You know, I found your stuff from, I think you viewed my LinkedIn or something. And then I looked up your blog, and I was just really impressed with the humor and the cleverness and how you kind of brought your voice and personality to talking about your experiences or what you wanted to achieve, that type of stuff. So the first question I have is, how did you found your own, you know, blog brand, and, you know, you run the Instagram, you make the graphics, you do all this work. What kind of drove you to do that? And what kind of inspired you to want to pursue a career working in sports?
Yeah, I guess going way back, my family's had football season tickets to Iowa football since before I was born. Like, my dad hasn't missed a game since the last time my brother was born, which is about 15 years ago. So it's like Hawkeye passion, and being around that atmosphere for forever has been pretty cool. But then fast forward, my freshman year around March is when we got sent home for COVID. And I feel like we all kind of had that, like, okay, what next? Of, are we going to be in our parents' basement for 2 weeks, or when am I going back? And found that, like, with online classes, had some extra time. So over around June or so, just kind of like creative brainstorming of, I'm a freshman here. I know I want to work in the sports industry, but how do you make it? How do you create, like, a different path for yourself to separate yourself from everyone else? And so with that, I had the idea of starting a blog. So I was really nervous of, like, I have no creative writing background or how to do this at all, but just knew I had a passion. And it kind of all stemmed from the idea of, all my friends are like, but how do you know that? And I wanted to prove to females especially that it's not rocket science. And it, like, sports can be described in a super simple manner. I try and keep it relatable and fun and something that people can connect to and feel a part of. So that was the reason for founding it. And it's kind of just been a creative outlet for my passion ever since.
So can you tell everybody what your major is?
Yeah, so not creative writing, nothing related to that. I'm actually a business analytics major here at Iowa with minors in sport and rec management and Spanish.
So being a business analytics major, where does the creative side come from?
Yeah,
because I have friends in Tippy and who are business majors who are accounting and all that stuff, and they have no writing ability. So I want to know where that came from. How did you find your voice as a writer and be able to craft narratives the way you want to?
Yeah, I wish I had some super cool, like, oh, it just came to me one day origin story. But I don't. I think it stems from being an extrovert and being like a people person. I just love to connect with people. Okay, maybe we could say it started from standing in the tailgating lot at age 12 and hearing my dad talk to guys about football and being a part of the conversation, being allowed to be there, and just wanting to find a way to connect with people, and then kind of picking up the analytics as I got older with it and always liking math.
What, like, initially in your life, like, did you first get attracted to that made you want to, like, start engaging the sports talk and, like, the analytics side of it? Like, what first opened your eyes to this, like, love that you now have?
Yeah, I guess, like, participating in sports all my life was, like, a key. And then I guess even, like, throughout elementary school, high school, like, you have a apt towards math or towards writing, and knew that I was good at math and liked it to solve problems, and then was like, is there a way to fuse these two together? And I guess some, like, steps along the way would be just a passion. I used to, like, for the NFL draft, make a super simple Excel spreadsheet of, like, the first round picks, their order, where they went to school, their, like, star recruit ranking, and then do, like, sort by, and then just see if there were commonalities, and then be like, Oh yeah, it looks like we are. Iowa is tight end you, you know, just very basic level stuff. And then being introduced to the movie Moneyball.
I was
I think.
I was about to ask if like
Yeah.
Moneyball kind of just like clicked for you and you're like, wow, there it is, right there.
Yep. Yeah.
So before I dive deeper into some professional stuff and some of the segments we have planned for this pod, I want to ask you to kind of share your connection with Iowa football and your passion for Iowa football and kind of share the unique experience you had this year with traveling to games.
Yeah, so like I said, big Hawkeye football fan. My whole family is. They have season tickets, which checks off like 7 out of 12 games there. And then, of course, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, which is a 2-hour drive to Ames and an hour drive to Lincoln. My family likes to do one away trip a year, and those two don't count. Too close. Those are just, oh, how convenient, away games. So all of a sudden, I had attended 9 games, and then I had asked my dad one weekend, like, okay, what's our away game this year? And we pretty spontaneously, our guys that parked next to us in the RV lot had 2 extra tickets out to Maryland. And I'm like, let's do it. It's not every day that you get 2 extra tickets to Maryland. Little did I know we would drive. So left, like, yeah, no regrets though. Honestly, the best time. I think that's like one of my favorite games I've ever been to. Friday night game. Went to Maryland, and then a few weeks later, it was Wisconsin game was coming up, and for my birthday, I was surprised with Wisconsin tickets. And then I'm trying to think of the last away game.
Northwestern.
Yes, Northwestern. My two roommates are in a business fraternity here, and they were doing a pro trip to Chicago, and a bunch of their friends were going to the game. So I'm like, I gotta hit the last one. That's the last one that is like questionable. So I drove up Saturday, went to the game, and drove home with them. We got all in a day, got back to Iowa City around like 2 a.m.
And so I was just gonna
She's
say,
dedicated to Hawkeye football, is what I'm trying
definitely.
to
And I have
get
to
through.
ask, everybody always says like Kinnick East is here, Kinnick East is there. Like, where is Kinnick East? Because everybody decides that Kinnick East is just everywhere.
Right. I don't know about a Kinnick East, but for sure Kinnick North is Minnesota. That was a home game this year, but I have been there. They hate us up there. It's like, we hate Iowa. Who hates Iowa? We hate Iowa. Or like, fuck the Hawks mid-game. Like, I will say it has the best stadium food, but
Well, what do they have to offer that's so good? Now I'm
cheese
curious.
curd, so
Oh,
good.
can't go
Yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, but then like as we're leaving the stadium after a win, I can't remember what year it was we went up there, it's Kinnick North chanting throughout. It's just pretty cool.
Love that wrinkle about Hawkeye football, where anywhere you go, west, north, south, east, it's Kinnick wherever, and it's awesome. Especially that Maryland game. I was just gonna like bring it up, like that game. I don't think Maryland draws a ton of people, but it looked and felt like it was a Kinnick East by far.
Right, yes. Or even I saw Sammy up at Northwestern Stadium, 50% full maybe, and a solid showing of Hawk fans.
But my point is too with this story is Jack, she travels the country during school weeks to see the Hawks. Guess how many Hawkeye games Jack went to this year?
Over under, you gotta like, what are we thinking here?
I don't
I'm
want to set the
asking.
line. I don't want to
Yeah,
set the
Jack can't
line.
set it. You have to set it. Over under, what do you think the over under is? Has a
You
sports
had to make
podcast,
it
runs Barstool
right.
Iowa.
Yeah,
Very
like
in-depth in the Hawkeye brand.
5 at least is acceptable.
Hard no. He
Ooh.
made it to one, and that's because
Yeah.
I basically forced him to go, and his friends forced him to go.
That's
That's ridiculous. I'll be
see.
your new co-host.
I I'm looking for a new one because of it.
I have absolutely no live sport credibility when it comes to Hawkeye sports. None. None. We had Dave Revson from Big Ten Network on, and I told him, hey, I'm going to the Iowa Purdue basketball game, the one where Purdue smoked us at home. And he was, oh, I go, yeah, that's my first one. And I told him I was a senior. Dave nearly had a heart attack on the
Lost
pod,
all
and
respect. And
literally
then
all
Jack had to work
credibility
the
out the window.
respect. Jack literally had to spend the
Yeah.
rest of the pod getting his respect back.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. What
Yeah,
would you
no,
do? What would you do if you found out, like, one of your friends who said they were a diehard Hawkeye fan went to one game a year? Haley.
Whoa. Hold on. Pause. Hold on, Haley, before you answer. Like, I wouldn't say I'm diehard here. I'm a Hawkeye fan. I will not take the diehard title.
But
I don't think I deserve it.
I won't say diehard, but very ingrained in following what's going on day to day.
Fair enough.
Do you have, like, FOMO about games? Like,
No.
See, here was the thing. Like, you asked that. My roommate who had transferred in from Indiana, his first Iowa football game was at – or maybe it was the second. Was the Penn State game, right? And I, like, didn't have FOMO because he was there. I was like, what a cool experience for his first, like, Iowa football game to have it be that one. Look, like, it would be cool to go to it, but there's so many opportunities in life to go to big games, and it's not like those come around every other year, but it's a game. And in the grand scheme of it, like, Iowa won it. It was awesome, but I would have really cared about, like, the playoff game. You know, knock on wood if that ever happens. Like, that's where my mind's at. We're like, yeah, it's regular season. I love it. I'm glad
he traveled for the playoff game.
I would.
Keep in mind, Haley, keep in mind. Jack went to Indy for the Big Ten championship, did not go to the game.
Why?
Did the drive and did not go.
Oh, dude, here's the second thing. I didn't have a ticket because I was going to my sister's wedding that weekend.
But you still went. You still drove all the way to Indy.
I did. I had to have, like, all of our flights rearranged so we could fly back earlier once Minnesota beat Wisconsin. I looked at my mom. I go, we're going to have to change our flight because – this is going to complicate things. Like, we're in the game now. I got to go. Yeah. So we changed up the flights. I pulled in to this parking garage next to Brothers, which is like a block away from Lucas Oil.
Right.
I walk into Brothers as the anthem's finishing up.
Can you imagine putting all that work to go to a city where your team's playing and you don't go to the stadium?
No.
And then they get smoked. And then... even worse,
at least you face the depression with all the Hawkeye fans in the stadium.
Well, the worst part was there were Michigan fans that were just dogging us, and I'm like, dude, what kind of fans are you? Like, do you really think we had that much of a chance in this game, and you're gonna dog on us? Like, come on. One guy asked me, he goes, why'd you guys even come if you knew you were gonna lose? I'm like, is this what Michigan fans are? I don't regret it. But it does. It is a bad look to not go into the game. I will agree. I digress.
Right. And I will say, though, I guess that's more acceptable than leaving fourth quarter because that one really gets me going at home games. So,
yeah, Jack would be a guy that leaves a fourth quarter, I though.
Yeah.
I stay until the end of every single game I go to.
The one game a year.
I stay to the end.
Did you stay for Iowa basketball whole game?
Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't want to. We were getting ran, and I was like, guys, and we kind of made a little comeback, and then it was Ivy time, and, well, that was how it went. But either way, I did stay until the end. I wasn't pleased. At least they got him back in the end. I just didn't get to see it.
Fun fact, the only sport Jack will stay for, except when it's fall ball, is he'll stay for Iowa baseball.
Okay, I do love to hear it. Say it louder for the people in the back that won't come out, but, yeah.
Got to go to Iowa baseball games this spring. I've already been to one. I've already done my part, and I'll keep going. But so that kind of leads to, like, the next topic I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, as someone who wants to pursue a career in sports and stuff, how did you put yourself in a position to work with the Iowa baseball team, and what kind of goes into your role as an Iowa manager, and what attracted you to that position is kind of like what I was curious, because that's a job you don't often hear about from other students unless you know someone who does it. So can you kind of give a little bit more of a landscape of how that, about that whole position and how it operates and how you got it, and kind of give the blueprint there?
Yeah. So that I applied my sophomore year winter. Was when the application was, and to even get to that point or find out about it, I had a mutual friend of a current manager, her name's Bailey, we both knew, and they were like, you need to go to coffee with Bailey just to figure it out, like, just talk to her, she'll give you a good conversation, it'll be great. And I did, and was completely drawn in about what she had to say about the program, and she's giving me book recommendations and just left feeling super inspired and motivated of like, okay, let's take this risk and apply. So I went through, the first round was a Google form questionnaire. I was like, easy, like I can do this. I found out I made it to the second round, which was a questionnaire, with one of the questions being like, what is the difference between linear regression and logistical regression? And I'm still over here in like microeconomics, like intro to marketing,
not calling yourself
a business kid. Yeah, not even, I can say not a clue. Good thing it was like open note. winter break too, mind you. So I'm like, can't I just like not do school right now? But did that. Apparently my answers were good enough to get me to the next round. And kind of like your Moneyball type of questions, because the role I applied for was data analyst, which leads me to something not a lot of people know. Within our manager program, we have four types of managers. The first being on field, your typical setup, tear down of practice. Data analysts, where we're doing a lot of really cool high level programming, coding to, we call it moving the needle of the game, just as you'd expect with like modernizing baseball. And then there's video and scouting, which looks at a lot of our technology and some of the more movement type stuff through cameras. And then last are our operations assistant, which I do some work in that department as well of organizing scouting reports, apparel, food, travel, kind of anything, all the loose ends that make us a really well-run program. So applied to be data analyst, and then had an informal phone call with the previous head manager, who actually, shout out, is now working with the Detroit Tigers in their front office. And then had an interview with six current managers, and then one final interview with the six managers again and the director of baseball operations. So a pretty high level process, one that I had no idea about and what I was getting myself into.
When it was all said and done, how long did that take? Because that sounded rather extensive.
Right, about a month, and predominantly over winter break. So, yeah.
What like interested you in applying for that position and dedicating like a big chunk of your time into the Iowa baseball team? What have you gained out of it? What were you hoping? Is it everything you hoped to gain out of it? Or, you know, what have been the things you've learned the most in this, you know, thing? And as someone who wants to do sports analytics, how has this position motivated you to continue to pursue that?
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot there. But I honestly had not a lot of expectations going into it. I wouldn't have even told you baseball was my favorite sport beforehand, let alone college baseball, which I don't think it gets the recognition it deserves. But coming in, I just knew I wanted to like make my mark on this campus within sports. And it's like any way how, you guys know, it's just like if you can get one person on the pod, like you just love it at the end of the day. Kind of along with that is I love the hustle. So it's like, I don't know what's going to come of this, but if it gets me a new experience or a story to tell, or I kind of frame it as like, while I'm reaching for this ultimate goal, I love the chase in the process. So it's learning something new every day. I would say, so I've been there over a year, and you kind of forget how cool it is some days. So reminding yourself, I'd say the same with your guys' podcast, like you guys are so cool, you know, and realizing like all the things you've done is pretty cool. But another big takeaway is just how like welcoming an environment it's been, from my fellow managers to players to coaches. It's everybody has this end goal of like wanting to succeed, and it's how can we all get there together? Yeah, I guess that answers some of the questions, but
oh, that's great. And then one, I have to agree with you, Jack's like the coolest guy that's like ever existed. So I totally get that.
The coolest guy attend Iowa football home games. So
that's that's true. I mean,
let's go.
He is repping for once.
Yeah. Iowa baseball. Sorry. Where's your Sam? Nice blue shirt. Off tone. Not even Cub blue.
Wow. Look at that. Sneaking gear. Asking the players for gear. Wow. Look at that. But the thing I wanted to ask you next is, what have you learned the most, like in the process about you know, your career passions and goals? Like, have you grown from it? And like, how have your goals changed? Have they stayed the same? Like, you know, has the bar moved at all where you're like, this was the goal freshman year? Is that still the goal? Or, you know, from your experiences, have you, you know, learned more where you're like, I actually want to do this and pivot?
Yeah, I would say the goal is still like ultimate, super broad, make it in the sports industry. And to me, that's NFL, MLB. I'm not a huge NBA fan personally, but just in a high level organization, kind of not your PE teacher, love it, would love to retire one day and do that, but it's like make it in this super competitive industry. And so with that, I get a lot of times like, oh, so you hang around the players. And it's, yeah, you're around them, but that's not why I'm here. That's not gonna get me to the industry. So that is my goal. Kind of in relation to that, the biggest thing I've learned is it's a lot of hard work. Not everybody makes it. It's a lot of long hours. I had the privilege of traveling with the team this past spring to South Carolina. It's long hours, long days of work. Work isn't 8 to 5. It's being asked to do whatever's, or being expected to do whatever's asked of you and more. It's working at a high level all the time, remaining professional, all those intangibles that everybody from the outside is like, doesn't even think about. You know, so it's waking up early, it's putting in the work, it's sometimes school comes second, but school is still expected to be done and done at a high level. A lot of your other industries, you don't get that with, but I love it. It goes back to the hustle and the chase and the competitiveness that I love.
Yeah, one question, I just have one question, like where in this entire journey have you seen, like, where was the first instance of real like struggle or adversity or challenge you faced where you were like, man, this could be a lot more than I thought I could actually chew. Like, this is just a ton. Did you ever have that moment? And if so, like, kind of what went through your mind to like continue and just keep chugging away?
What keeps the fire fueled?
Yeah, I would say two kind of separate experiences that really hit home for there. The first being the time commitment. I have been told all the time, like, oh, you're so busy. And it's true, but I do it to myself. And it's because you love it, but baseball or whatever sport you're involved with takes time. And trying to prioritize school and a social life and everything else, all of the above, all your commitments is a lot. And at the end of the day, I just like crash in my bed. And it's like, and I look at the calendar and it's do it all over again the next day and the next day. And so I guess I find that I still want to stay the course when it's those little payoffs, when the team wins or when a fellow manager picks me up or asks, hey, like, want coffee. It's just the little wins that it's like we all have each other's back and you love it at the end of the day. And then the second is I applied to be a data analyst manager with no coding experience, which is kind of like, what are you doing?
A little daunting.
Yeah. Yeah, so daunting, even going through the application process, huge imposter syndrome, and stepping into the office and knowing this program has the success of putting people in the MLB as analysts or as in roles of front offices. And it's like, you're starting from ground zero, but then it kind of places the chip on your shoulder of like, do it. Yeah. So imposter syndrome and time, I'd say.
What's the dream job? 10, 15, 20 years from now, where's the job in pro sports where you're like, if I reach that, that's the pinnacle, if there is one?
Yeah, still figuring it out every day, kind of changing, but a lot of our data analyst duties involve player development, as seen in the movie Moneyball. That's where baseball's at right now. But I've also, in talking to some executives in the NFL, had the opportunity, reached out over the past few months. They are doing a lot of analytics in the customer relationship management, or that's a big business word, CRM. So it's how do we generate more revenue? How do we increase viewership? That side of analytics. So it's like sports business analytics. Doing that for an NFL, that's kind of my bias, team, organization, would be incredible.
Well, If you do it for the Chicago Bears, Jack's going to be selling hot dogs there in about 10 years is kind of his goal to work in sports.
I would totally be cool with selling hot dogs.
I know.
At that Arlington Stadium, please. Yeah. There's got to be some amenities that come with it. Yeah. There has to be.
She could be your boss, Jack.
Look, I'm not against it. We just kind of like same threat as NFL. Like, just personally, like, who is your team that you kind of rally for?
Yeah, so the Minnesota Vikings.
Tough. See, we have a lot of Vikings fans that come on here, and there's not a whole lot that we can say. Kirk Cousins is going to do it, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like you've been saying that for the last 5 years, so.
Right. So maybe
on keeping on.
Job is, like, how to use analytics to stick with a good quarterback, sign a fair contract for their talent level, and put that other money towards somewhere else, you know? Keep Dalvin Cook healthy, maybe. Bring Stephon Diggs back. I'd take it. How can we use the numbers to make that happen?
Well, I just struck an absolute chord. Didn't mean to do that.
That's okay.
Haley, I'm curious from your perspective, what have been your favorite moves of the offseason so far? And what moves have you hated the most?
Yeah, which ones like have kind of like tickled your analytical brain? You're like, that right there, that speaks to me. Which ones? I'm kind of curious now.
I'm trying to think. The biggest thing coming to mind is, what's the Arians move? I don't know why he's stepping down. Can't explain that. And like, if you want to look at the metric of wins and winning with Brady as your quarterback on a super high level, I don't know. But that'll be an interesting one to track. A lot about the Bucks and team dynamic and all that. So that's just what first came to mind. Another is, I kind of have some personal connection to Noah Fant. Seeing him go out to Seattle was a little sad for me. I don't know. I know Denver's not the place he was meant to be or truly make a name for himself, but being Midwest and just knowing he was there. But seeing who his quarterback is out at Seattle, you could look at Seattle as a really interesting offseason case study, who they bring in and then what type of offense they choose to implement.
I mean, it might not change. It might stay Drew Lock.
Right. Okay. Hoping for better for their sake, but yeah. Yeah.
Jack, what's been your least favorite and favorite offseason move?
Least favorite. I think any Jacksonville Jaguars signing, just because they have to overpay an absolutely disgusting amount for mid-tier free agents. It's
don't call Brandon Scherf a mid-tier free agent.
Okay. Excuse me. Christian Kirk getting like $90 million. I got a problem with that. Those
on Lawrence.
So, I don't, the book's still out. Like, he's had it in his like hands from Jump Street in college football, that he had like the best weapons, he had the best program at that moment. He comes to Jacksonville, which is an absolute dumpster fire. And I've seen this TikTok of Kobe talking about like circumstance. No, but it makes sense.
I know.
Like,
when I just AI love how you reference Philly, TikTok.
But it makes sense, because he came into an absolute dumpster fire, like the complete opposite of what Clemson was. It is going to be damn hard for him to be successful in the NFL. And I think a lot of people are going to count him out just because it's Jacksonville. But I think he's miles better than what Blake Bortles ever was, and that's their next franchise quarterback that they've had. So you can't be upset if you're Jacksonville. All you can sit there and say is, like, how do we make Jacksonville attractive? Like, that's the big problem, and I don't even know how they –
Last year they announced a huge – they're building a whole new practice facility, and they're building a really big luxury hotel right around their stuff. They're trying to make it more of a – we want our fans to like actually engage with the team other than the
games. Other than putting pools in the stadium.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think the business side of the Jags has done a phenomenal. Last year they hired this woman who came from the Texans, Amy Palik or something like that. She left to work for the NFL now, but she worked there for a year after a year of Urban Meyer. She was the head of PR, and she's one of the best in the business.
God bless her soul. Yeah.
But like, they were bringing staffers in on the business side of it who were like really impressive in what they do. So there's that investment. I believe in Trevor Lawrence. I think that Doug Peterson, not the, you know, I mean, he's a Super Bowl winning coach, but But I think he's going to bring the culture they need to lay the foundation for the next guy to come in 3-4 years where they could actually compete. But so I think that just the jury's out on Lawrence. But what's your favorite move?
Okay, the favorite, it's going to be weird. But every single person and their mother hates these Von Miller, Bobby Wagner deals that make no sense. And I love them. I love how they break everyone's brains and they just see this big number in tons of years and they go, how is he going to play till he's 38? Well, he's probably not. He's just not. Like, it's just not happening. A lot of the money's being spread out. I love the deals because it just breaks everyone's brains. Like that Taysom Hill deal from last year, we got like 150 million.
And now he's going to be a tight end.
Yeah, it's. I love those deals. Those just keep, they keep the NFL's fandom just spinning, going like, cap is fake, cap is fake. It is all fake. It's not, I had this analogy, I don't even know if it makes sense. It's not even like cap compliance in the NFL. It's more about like cap manipulation. Like they just manipulate the cap every single year to make it work. And it's incredible. They do it. They just jump gymnastics every year around these little rules. NBA is the same way. I have no idea how the NBA works. They have so many different taxes and stuff. That is a whole nother ball game. But yeah, I love those deals that make no sense. Those are the ones that just love them.
My favorite deals in the offseason were very basic, like very boring, which were the Bengals just getting an O-lineman for Burrow. Like, I just was like, they played by the book. Like, they just got what they needed and they have what they have and they're going to go after it. And the other thing I found interesting too was Harbaugh got an extension till 2025. And I thought that was a very signifying thing that he's still going to be around in this division of the Steelers quarterbacks in flux. You have the Ravens, but Lamar's up in the air right now because he's his own agent. You don't know what he's going to sign for or if he'll agree to a deal.
Wait, is Baltimore. He really his own? He doesn't have an agent.
He represents himself or his mom's his agent. I love
that.
And then Cincinnati. And then you have, who's the other AFC team I'm blanking on? North. The Browns. And then you have Deshaun going to the Browns on a fully guaranteed deal. That was the worst deal I think I saw free agency.
Oh, I forgot all about
Deshaun
that.
Watson a fully guaranteed deal. I just can't stand
that. Wasn't
that
the first one in NFL history, like fully guaranteed this?
Yeah.
I choose to forget that man exists sometimes. So
yeah, it's amazing that he's the one that, you know, broke that precedent and like is the first one to do it. Incredible to me. It should have been like if anyone Patrick Mahomes, but whatever. Either way,
it's gonna. And I'm interested to see what Kyler gets now with that. If he gets fully guaranteed, if it's moving. I've wondered through this offseason if the NFL is now moving into an NBA-style free agency trades. When players want to leave, they leave. It's not the owners controlling them anymore. And two of the things that really signified it for me is, like, with the Dolphins, with everything that came out about Stephen Ross, if, like, all this bad PR, you know, with the Washington football team or Washington, whatever they're called now, like – What are they again, Jack?
The Commanders.
Yeah, the Commanders. Like, everything coming about those owners, it's kind of like, it's a bad look for these owners to have such stern control over their players that player mobility is becoming a thing. I mean, Tom Brady coming back and then basically getting Bruce Arians fired from the team. I mean, pretty powerful move after winning a Super Bowl 2 years ago. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to follow. But now what I want to go into is a segment that I'm very excited about. Jack is, he doesn't fully know what's coming. So I'm excited. We call it Haley's Hypothesis. Haley's done some analytical theories, is the way I'll put it, on some different Iowa sports stuff. And she's going to kind of present it and we're just going to kind of discuss them. So Haley, if you want to introduce the first one, pop it up on the screen. We'll get going.
All right. So I don't even know the origin of these thoughts. I just keep a notes app on my phone of like random things that make me tick. And it's kind of like my ultimate goal at the end of the day is to make analytics understandable for anybody or just of interest, because it's not going away from the sports industry by any means. So this is a super high, like super basic, I guess, and honestly not even a tell really of anything important. But in becoming a baseball manager, I've learned that you often play a weekend series against the same team and then midweek games against a slightly less competitive team, usually, not always, but, and then within that, so let's say this upcoming weekend, we have a 3-game series with the University of Michigan. Oftentimes, you will want your best pitcher, your ace, on Fridays. So this year, it's been Adam Mazur for us mostly. And then Saturday and Sunday guys are also usually considered your 2 and 3, or I mean, you need a series win on a Sunday, all of importance. And each coach does it differently, has their own philosophy. And so I don't want to read too much into it, but it just the like basic question of, okay, so how's our Friday starter doing? And again, super basic in he doesn't play all 9 innings. Hitters are of equal importance, equally responsible for the outcome of the game. But I guess just kind of like more fun thing to share that I came up with. We have been struggling to find our Saturday and Sunday identity. We've had a rotation of pitchers, but notably, we've gone 1-5 on Saturdays this season. So it's like, what is the problem there? And to me, in creating this graph, it was, that's a red flag. So where do you look further? And you would obviously not just stop here and say, oh, must be our pitching and our starter and not our relievers. You know, that's a bold take, not great in an analytics mind. But then it's like, well, Sundays we've been getting the job done. And Sundays for us have been like a collection of players doing each giving a few solid innings. So just looking at that, and that's like how my brain works, a random question, random hypothesis, look at it from a super broad scope perspective, and then go from there. So I thought that'd be kind of interesting to share with you guys or anyone that isn't super analytically thinking. That's just where my mind starts.
And for everyone listening at home, Haley's put together this sheet of all of the days of the week and the Iowa baseball team's win percentage by each day. So Monday, they're 1-0, Tuesday, 1-1, Wednesday, 1-0, Thursday, they've yet to play a game. Don't know if they will. Friday, they're 3-2, Saturday, 1-5, and then Sunday, they're 5-1. My first takeaway from this is, I don't know. Like, that is a glaring problem, but I don't even know, like, where to start with that. The problem with baseball, in my eyes, is just there's so many factors to it that, like, it's so hard to pin anything down on one thing, you know? Like you've said, like, the pitching and the hitters are equally responsible for the outcome of the game. Bullpen, too. There's just so much going on. Sam, like, I don't even know what to take from this. Like, what's your first takeaway?
When Haley first brought this idea to me, I found it so fascinating because I never thought in my head, like, whatever day a team plays on, it impacts their performance. And so when she brought the original chart up to me, seeing that it was staggering, like, Saturdays, games are lost. Like, it's just a day. It just makes you wonder, like, does they matter? Is it the routine of each week? Like, when they're playing on weekends and during the week they're practicing or, you know, whatever, like, is that taking a toll on their body that Friday's game is just so intense because they're playing against the top pitcher on another team that it kind of just wears you down a little, that once you get to Saturday, it's a little tough. And then Sunday, you know, you're kind of playing a more back end guy that you're like, okay, our confidence is back up. We know we can, you know, kind of perform well. I've just wondered, like, I've never thought about day impacting it. So I'm just kind of curious, like, Haley, where do you think day can impact a player's performance? And how did you even think about how a day could impact a team as a whole?
Right. I honestly don't know where I, like, came up with that. But I guess in the question coming into the season is like, oh, our pitching core is so solid. And then it's like, okay, how are they doing? And this guy pitches this day of the week, this guy this, you know? So instead of, I made this to show, not to come up with an answer or talk super analytically about baseball, because we have guys in our program doing way more advanced stuff than me coming up with, like, actual answers to these problems, but more to show people, like, analytics is fun, or, like, it's a curiosity thing, and this is how it starts. So even as Sammy's talking, the idea came into my mind, look at an NFL team. How does their performance year to year, how's it impacted by an 11 a.m. kick, 3 p.m. and Sunday night? I know the Vikings are horrible in prime time. So is it something to do with the fact that they're in prime time or the routine of the day? Like, what affects that? Or is it even something? Or is it just a fun conversation that sports lovers can have? I don't know.
It even goes so deep. I don't even know if this would count as analytical, but I know that there was a stat that came out once the whole Carson Wentz move went down that he was the best quarterback in 74-degree weather. That someone had compiled those stats of all the games in 74-degree weather over the last 4 or 5 years, and Carson Wentz was, bar none, the best in quarterback rating, yards, touchdowns, whatever. It was just insane. But does that explain anything? I don't know. But that's, like you said, it's a fun conversation for people to have. It furthers this, like, the sports talk, because that's all people really care about. Like, we're sitting here talking about days of the week in baseball, and Sam had a really cool, like, thought with how Friday might wear them down into the Saturday game, and then they have their confidence back on Sunday with the back end guy. Like, I didn't think about that, but it's so crazy how such a simple thought just being laid out like this just triggers such a simple discussion that, I mean, that's all sports really should be about, just people talking and just bouncing ideas off of each other.
Right. And that kind of goes back to my whole, like, upbringing of, like, let's just connect, find a way to connect with a person and, like, find a similarity or a difference. And I'd love to argue this with you for 3 innings in Dwayne Banks, you know?
And that's what I'm excited about with this segment, with Haley's Hypothesis, to bring to the City Off Campus brand, is bring, you know, creative things like that to the table, highlight analytics and highlight kind of the thought process. Because I think so many sports fans now hear about analytics, or they're curious by analytics, they watch Moneyball and they think that's all it is, but so much more. And these high level questions, but are brought in a low level concept, I think really give sports fans and people who want to be in sports a glimpse into what goes on behind it. So I love this stuff. I'm excited for the next one we're about to present, but also for the ones to come, because I think there's some good pieces of content we can bring. And I think it's going to engage a lot of questions among sports fans, especially Hawkeye fans, as we theme it around some of the Iowa stuff. So Haley, we obviously had a disappointing year with Iowa basketball. We won a Big Ten championship. We're forever champions there. But obviously we fell short into the NCAA tournament. And all people want to do is talk about the Fran fade, whether it's in February, it's March. Shout out Ben Udell, who doesn't stop talking about the Fran fade. And I want to really, you know, you brought this to me about the Fran fade. She did an in-depth look at Fran's coaching career and the Fran fade. And it's just very interesting. So I want this to kind of be brought up.
Yeah. Did it switch over there all right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure did.
Okay. So again, like, for people just listening, I went through and I started in an Excel doc of, since 2013, well, Fran's been the coach since 2011, but I just looked at a 10-year, even that sample size is, like, questionable on what we're going to call a Fran fade. But from 2013 to 22, I wrote out the records of, I guess I should have put labels on my chart here. The left side is our record in February and then in March with the straight up record and then win percentage. So, Jack, I hear you are a Fran fade believer.
Whoa, that might be slanderous. I don't know if I believed in it. I don't believe in his ability to get it done when it matters at the end of the year. But
previous years, you've had some Fran fade.
It took some National Players of the Year to get this fade under
control.
That's
what I'm saying. It took you 2 years to finally believe.
Okay, I'll shoulder some of the responsibility, sure.
Okay, fair. But I'm here to defend him a little bit. I am not the biggest fan. But to pull up the numbers and help the guy out a little bit, in looking at this, you can take a lot of things away. And again, proving it's still pretty high level. But Fran in 2021 in February was 6-3 with a 0.667 win percentage, 4-2 in March, again, 0.667. In 2022, this past year in February, he was 7-1, making a win percentage.
Staggering.
Right? Yeah. And then in March, again, 4-2, 0.667. And one thing Sammy and I talked about here, everybody except one team is going to end their march with one or two losses in how they compete in their respective championship, their conference championship, and then we walk away with one winner. So I'm defending Fran here. I know
Kentucky lost in the first round. Coach Cal lost in the first round. Fran did too. Doesn't make Fran a bad coach.
Right. Now, if you look back between 2018, 2020, it's then a little concerning of the Fran fade. But then it goes back to the argument of it's March. March is madness for a reason. It's maddening for all of us. Like, that's the reason we love it. We love this, like, month of March, except when it happens to your team. So then to go back him up again in February, he's got better numbers. And so, yeah, it drives me crazy. I've yelled at the screen and I've called for him to be fired from my whatever that's worth. But I just think in looking at these numbers again, wins is such a basic analytic thing to look at. But it's like numbers don't lie.
Yeah, no, numbers don't lie. And at the end of the day, like with sporting events, like it just comes down to like wins and losses. So like there is a ton that goes into how those results come. But like looking at 2018 through 2020 of March, I mean, 2018, 0-1, 2019, 2-5, 2020, 0-2. And then the previous 2 years, he's gone 4-2 in March. It's nice to see that there's been growth in that department where that fade in March has slowed. That it's starting to become solidified. And I think the other thing that I will defend Fran's honor in, it's you have to contextualize it with this is Iowa basketball. This is never supposed to have been a blue blood perennial powerhouse program. Right. And Iowa fans for the last 2 years have had this expectation of competing there when in reality right. it takes time, but it also takes those top recruits. Like Arkansas right. lost and they had three McDonald's All-Americans in the wings. That's how you reload. Like we just can't reload like that. But for Fran to slow that fade with Iowa basketball and have studs being able to prove that the last 2 years, I think it does him some good in the long run where he's trying to change the tone and era of Iowa basketball. It's hard. Nobody respects Iowa basketball. Like you don't think of that and go, damn, you got to watch out for the Hawks. Don't let them get hot. Not a lot of people say that. It's taken Fran McCaffrey, I think, to give him more legitimacy the last 5 years. But Iowa fans, it's just there's always been a feeling in my heart where there's never a satisfaction except.
Hold up.
There's not. I'm satisfied.
I'm going to defend Fran here for a minute.
Whoa.
In a conference of Big Ten basketball where you have Michigan State with a guy like Tom Izzo who basically pays his guys, what do you want? Open checkbook. You got Michigan, same deal. Okay. You got Wisconsin who does basically the same thing on a smaller scale. You got Ohio State. You got some of these big programs. I mean, Maryland historically is a historically great program. And you got Indiana who's historically great. It's not loosey-goosey conference where we're supposed to be the top dogs. Fran's development of talent has been insane. I mean, Tyler Cook stayed on an NBA roster the last couple of years. Luka Garza, Joe Wieskamp, Keegan's up next. You got Peter Jock in the league a little bit, a few other guys. But you look at him in February where everybody's like, uh-oh, the Fran fade's coming. 7 of the last, like, 10 years, he's had a winning percentage in February, okay? Then you go into March. And I'd say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So half of those years, he's had a winning percentage in March. When you're a middle of the pack program like Iowa, where you're not getting the funding to go after those top guys. And Fran is respected widely by a lot of coaches and a lot of people in that industry in the NBA and stuff as being that guy who does it the right way and brings his players in like family. The success he's had is truly impressive in this day and age of one and done. We're one of the few programs.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
One of the few 4-year programs. And that's a special thing where our, you know, people talk about Jabo, like we just want Jabo to leave and all this stuff. At least we get to complain about our players leaving. Most people have to beg their players to stay till their sophomore year. So it's just like my biggest thing when Haley presented this to me is it just shows how special of a program Iowa is. And yes, we fell short this year. I had us going to the Final Four. It was extremely crushing and disappointing. I know the players were crushed, but like the fans and, you know, some of the guys have talked about this before on how critical they are of Fran. And it's just, this chart just proves how unfair, especially these last 2 years. It's just so unfair.
I would even go so far to even talk about how the roles of Jack Nungy and CJ Frederick last year and this year, how while those guys were supposed to be real high quality starter players, Jack obviously got injured and CJ as well couldn't stay healthy. Eventually they both transfer, but you didn't see a real fall off in terms of win loss record for Fran. And he lost how many, like five?
We won 20 plus games this year. We won 20 plus games and we only lost 9 games this year. Like we didn't do horrible, and we would have had a few more wins if the biggest thing for us that everybody kind of disregarded us early on for was the fact that we lost early, like to Purdue in December and things like that. But we almost beat Purdue at Purdue. We almost had a few other wins against schools like Illinois and stuff like that. And the only reason was we lost so many core guys like Luca, like CJ, like Nungy, that this team had to find a new identity. Like, you know, guys like Jabo and, you know, Pat and some of those guys who, and Connor, who played with, you know, the Lucas, the, you know, CJs for years and years. Like, there were a lot of new guys who had shoes to fill, like Keegan, like Chris, you know. So I think this coming season will be the biggest question mark for Fran, is how does he pull it together? I have faith he's going to pull it together despite guys like Toussaint and Josh, like Josh are leaving. But I think we're going to kill the transfer portal. And I think that we have so many guys returning that we're really not going to miss a beat. I think we'll lose a few extra games, but we're still going to be a tournament team. That's my prediction, while still being in March as we record this on March 31st before the Final Four.
Well, the one final thing I have to add to this Fran fate is there's this just brewing rivalry the last 3-4 years with Iowa and Illinois.
I love it.
Regionally, right?
That's what it used to be back in the day, too.
And I love it.
It's good for the AC days.
It's good for Midwest basketball to have something for people to like tune into, get kids to like want to go to these schools. But you look at Illinois from last year compared to this year, their only real subtraction was Io. And they lost Bishanis Vili, that big man. They really didn't lose a whole lot else, right? And you compare that to what Iowa lost and how I would say Iowa exceeded every expectation they had for basketball this year. And Illinois fell short again. And you have to compare where those programs are. Illinois is supposed to be a Sweet 16 team every year just based on program tradition. They can't, like, get there. And they've had arguably more talented players sometimes than Iowa. They're having even more brain-numbing problems, and I think Hawkeye fans realize what Iowa's going through. Like, yes, we have our own problems here at Iowa for basketball, but truly, it's really not that bad in the grand scheme. Like, it's Iowa basketball, and they're competitive in one of the toughest conferences in the nation year in and year out. At least you get to enjoy college basketball. It's not like you go to, like, Northwestern, and you just can't watch your sports, you know? Like, we have competitive sports teams year in and year out, and the Fran fade, I really just feel like it's something, it's the alliteration that people get caught on. I don't even think people care. It just like rolls off the tongue so well.
Biggest McCaffrey question for both of you. Does Connor come back for year 6?
Oh, Jesus. God, I don't see it.
What he'll go on to do, couldn't tell you, but I know he stepped away from baseball as a result of injuries, and I think you begged the question if Keegan would have came back, does he? But I think, like you said, with identity, this team's going to have a whole new identity next year.
Yeah. And that's, look, that's the beauty of college basketball, too, is these changing identities.
Every couple of years. COVID's extended it now, though, where players have the extra year.
But the nice thing is that there's still, each program has that brand, that identity of, like, where you know Villanova is going to have that quick point guard and then a bunch of 6'6 guards and forwards that drive and pass. You know that Duke's going to have the best players that know how to play because they're coached the best. You know, Michigan State's going to be coached hard and play as hard as everyone else. But it's just, there's these little wrinkles where, like, with this Iowa team this year, we were all concerned about rebounding. They ended up maybe not having the rebounders, but they upped their intensity to where those 50-50 balls became Iowa balls. And that was fun to see them kind of grow throughout the year. That's just the beauty of basketball. I'm excited to see what next year's team looks like. I'm excited to see Mulvey get more of an opportunity.
I call Mini Luka.
That's the fun in this just college basketball. And it's fun because Iowa gets to have players that you get to like grow to enjoy, like Peyton Sanford. You're going to enjoy that guy for another 2 years probably. And that's fun. You don't get that at like a Kentucky. You'll have CJ Frederick sitting on the bench all year. Yeah, he was hurt, but who knows how many minutes he would have got anyway. You know, he gets 25 a night at Iowa. So I'm excited. I don't think it's always doom and gloom. A lot of people are emotional, but I think this graph pretty much tells everyone to chill out.
Yeah, no, definitely. I love it. And I have two final questions for Haley as we wrap up this pod. And Jack, if you have any, you can wrap up after me. Yep. One is, and this is for both of you actually, is who do you have in the national championship? Who do you have winning this weekend? I'll tell you my picks first. I have Duke winning as a storyline buff. I need Coach K to beat North Carolina. He just can't go out with a loss. I want Villanova, Duke coming out on top. What do you guys want to see this Final Four?
Haley, please go first.
You can go first, Jack.
Okay, so I jumped on this narrative of Villanova early that if they're the best free throw shooting team of all time, like it's got to mean something. And I've been riding them all tournament, even though my bracket didn't represent that. But everybody's been knocking Villanova. I think that they've just got that little oomph that can take them somewhere. Kansas looked like the best team in basketball when they played Miami, and that was scary to see what like they could look like when they're full go. That looked like a team that couldn't be stopped. I just have to side with Villanova, slightly biased because they're an Augustinian college. I went to an Augustinian high school, so I have to stick to those roots, obviously. But with Duke, North Carolina, I would love to see North Carolina win, man. I would just think it would make that sweet, sweet story of Coach K that much better for his last two losses of his final year to be to North Carolina, who didn't even have Roy Williams. Come on. Like, that needs to be spoon-fed to me. No, it needs to be No. Okay, it just needs to be spoon-fed.
Okay. Kid just loves Barstool so much. He takes the Barstool takes.
No,
It's okay. You're not original. It's okay. You're not original.
I hopped on the UNC wagon when they beat Duke at the end of the year, and they were disrespected with a 9 seed in the tournament, and I had them making a little run, but I had them losing to UCLA. That didn't happen.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that Big Cow was just scrolling through Twitter, and he was looking through UNC Twitter, and he just found all your tweets on that, and he took that take, and you originated the Barstool take of UNC. I totally forgot. That's on me. That's on me. You are the creator. You are the creator of that take that they are highly marketing.
I guess I'm not allowed
right
to have my takes. I'm not allowed to have my takes. Haley, who do you think?
I'm going to side with Sammy here in you love the Duke Coach K story just to feel good, warm heart. I don't know. Call it being a simp for Coach K.
Yeah,
but
totally
whatever.
Being a simp.
I'm a huge simp for Coach K.
I kind of am too. So
you guys can die on that hill all day of the week. I will not. No, you can't catch me there.
Bro, just imagine the storyline of John Shire taking over a program that just won the national championship. They've won the top recruiting classes coming in. And if they don't stay Duke caliber, it is going to be the biggest downfall of a college basketball program ever. Like worse than UCLA, because this is modern basketball. It would be insane. It would be absolutely insane.
Right. On the other side, though, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, so grew up a big Creighton fan as well. Home season tickets to Creighton basketball. So I got to hand it to Jay Wright. I like what he does out there. I like what he represents. And so found a way to get it done or get to this point, not get it done. If I had to say, though, I think I want them to win it all, even though I know recent kind of lame, but just personal.
Look, it's totally okay to pick the best program in college basketball the last Duke? 5-10 years. Villanova's been pretty good. It's cool to pick them. A lot of people don't like to pick them because they're not the sexy
David
pick.
Impression.
Look, I hate you. We got to wrap this up. You're just sniping me now.
But my final question for Haley, and this is a question I normally ask athletes, but I think as someone who travels the country, going to Hawkeye games, diehard Hawkeye fan in Nebraska, which I also have to ask, like, what's the ridicule you got in school for being a Hawkeye fan? I mean, that's something I need to know.
That's another episode.
But so that will be for the next Haley's Hypothesis episode. We'll cover that. But I want to ask you, what does being, and also working for a Hawkeye team now, what does being a Hawkeye mean to you?
Yeah. I think you kind of see it throughout the whole university, in classes and like anybody you meet that's a Hawkeye fan, but it's just like a mutual respect and like family. I'd say, I don't think you get that every fan base, every university. To me, it's a lot of family and pride in what you do, I guess. Respect, family, and pride. I mean, we're not in the Final Four, probably won't be, but it's an understanding of like, hey, I respect that you're giving it everything day in and day out, and knowing your role and taking pride in that.
I couldn't agree more. And my last question, Haley, thank you so much for coming on, but this is a hot button topic on the pod. What's the best pizza in Iowa City?
Whoa. That's like putting me on the spot.
I know. Keep in mind, I've been doing pizza reviews this semester, so.
And I'm so uncultured. I don't think it's even fair for me to answer this.
All right, well, no, you have to now that you just sold yourself out that you're uncultured. I want to hear this answer.
So I'm going to go Casey's.
Oh, yes.
Sue me.
Yes. No, I will
not. I've never even tried Casey's. I just can't get myself to try it.
You can't call yourself a reviewer.
Well, I'm going to try it, but I just don't have the courage to. I'm like,
no.
I've never had gas station pizza before.
It's a general store.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess my final story here in being, have an RV, traveled up to the games for the past 20 years, we stop at a super small town, Iowa, Stewart, Iowa, every Friday night on the way up and get Casey's pizza and eat it in the RV as my dad's like going down 80.
Yeah, no, it was what I had the morning of the Iowa State game when I went to Ames. It's just one of those staples for Iowa.
Did you go into the game?
No, I didn't.
Oh, right,
see?
Right.
See? See what I'm dealing with, Haley?
Right. Okay, was your pizza breakfast pizza, though?
Yes. No, okay. I literally got the breakfast pizza this morning.
Yep.
Have to. I was dying for some breakfast. I didn't have any, like, bread or anything left to make something. I was like, oh, I need something. Oh. Went to Casey's, got a slice of their sausage breakfast pizza. Literally couldn't have had anything better. Sam, you're not a reviewer until you try it. I'm revoking your license until
I'm scared to try it.
What does that mean? How are you scared?
Like, I'm worried about like getting sick from like gas station pizza. See, everybody talks about it like with high praise, but like, I don't know.
Do you think
Riley Moss, to me, it just scares me.
Do you think Riley Moss could run a 4-4 if he didn't eat Casey's?
I heard it was an NIL deal.
I heard he can still run a 4-4 with the eating Casey's pizza.
Oh, no, you got, honestly, you know what we might have to do? I might have to do the Casey's review on the pod with you and Haley.
Please.
We all get the Casey's. Please. We all get a slice. And
it's what the people want.
It is.
Okay. That's what we might have to do next Haley's Hypothesis pod.
Perfect. I'm glad you can finally break this barrier and get over this fear of Casey's pizza. I can't believe I just said that.
But if I get sick, Jack, you have to go to Cultures of Basketball in my place, okay?
That's brutal. Ooh.
Deal.
Haley, we can't thank you enough for taking the time. We took a lot of your time.
Your microphone's steady.
No, I'm falling apart. Like always, guys, not the same time, same place. We'll see you guys later.